to the Public Safety Subcommittee of the House and Senate Joint Committee on Ways and Means. We have up for this afternoon for public hearing two bills. The first one that we'll hear is House Bill 2275. And Larry Nicklander, you're apparently the assigned staff. Do you want to give us a brief summary?
Yes, Chair Amick, committee members. This is a bill that comes to this committee from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law with a due pass recommendation. It is a bill that deals with the crime of mail theft. There are potential amendments being discussed for this bill. However, before you today is the bill in its A and growth form with approximately $320,000 fiscal impact. The subcommittee chairs have scheduled it today for a public hearing only, so that those who sent the bill here to talk a little bit about it, as well as have Phil Lemon from the Criminal Justice Commission talk about his research on the fiscal aspects of this bill, so that we could be in a better position to know what amendments might need to be made to make it feasible to do.
All right, thank you. I'll mention as the sponsor of the bill, the bill has come to us from the Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law. Representative Pazanski serves on that committee also. We heard a lot of testimony in that committee about the problem of theft of mail and the impact that it has in the process of working on this. We were certainly aware that there is a federal law which makes it a crime to steal mail, but we also received testimony about the lack of enforcement by the federal government in this and other areas where the federal government seems to feel it's fun to send out legislation, pass bills, and then not do enough to enforce it. Or to enforce the laws, and if I sound a little bit unhappy about it, we are unhappy at seeing that the Congress seems to be happy to keep passing federal criminal laws, but then they have very thin enforcement, and then there's old traditional laws such as mail theft, which has always been considered federal jurisdiction kind of stuff, that doesn't get enforcement because they don't have enough resources. We heard a lot of testimony from people who were affected by the theft of mail, and yet under state statute, the piece of mail itself does not necessarily have very much value, and the theft statutes are of not much use because if there's limited value to the piece of mail, then they can only charge you with a very low degree of theft. What this bill does is actually make the theft of this kind of material something of special value, just as a few years ago the legislature established the crime of pet theft. So if someone stole your pet, even though the pet may only have $20 value at the pound or whatever as a redemption value or something, we created a level of crime for stealing someone's pet or companion animal. Here, the concern had to do with the impact on individuals who were left without having received billing statements that they were supposed to pay, or didn't get credit card statements they were supposed to pay, people who were potentially interfering with their financial obligations by taking their mail, also the sense of personal invasion, which is incumbent or involved in mail theft. And I see Representative Byers of Rifle will get right to your bill in a moment. I'm just explaining another bill, so we're waiting for you. So I'll just finish my explanation, and then we'll go back into another public hearing so we can hear Representative Byers. Anyway, the bill has been worked up by the Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law. Representative Pazanski was very helpful in suggesting limiting language so we would focus on the actual areas that needed attention in terms of mail theft in Oregon. And we'll hear in a few minutes after we switch to another bill some discussion of the fiscal impact and how we might address that.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
The former representative was very supportive of this bill because he said people that would normally break into houses have found that stealing people's mail is a much more lucrative way of generating money. So there's less danger to them. They're not like they're not going to get shot by somebody inside of the house. And so they have turned to mail theft as a way of supporting their habits. So it truly is a widespread problem.
All right. Now we're going to recess the public hearing on House Bill 2275 so that we may go into public hearing on House Bill 3057, which relates to identity theft. I'll invite Representative Beyer up. If you may, I'll have Larry Nisswinder just give us a brief description of the bill.
And the committee members, this bill also comes to you from the House Judiciary Criminal Law with a due pass recommendation, and it establishes sanctions for identity theft and makes that a Class C felony. This bill also, in its current form, adds some additional offenses to the repeat property offender laws, and in the A and Gross form, actually that's one of the primary drivers of the increased fiscal impact statement. Representative Beyer has been working on amendments, as you may wish to address today before this committee, that do significantly reduce the fiscal impact in this bill. Hopefully achieve the policy he's hoping to achieve by sponsoring the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Nisswender. And Representative Beyer, good afternoon. Welcome to the subcommittee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, State Representative, District 28. If I may get to address right just a moment on the previous bill, I heard Representative Meadows make a statement of people stealing mail, a lot less likely to get shot. And, well, that people sitting home, sitting home, to worry about that because we're outlawing guns in the session. So,
as a side note, which bill was that?
I hadn't heard that one yet.
If you want to move this bill,
I thought the bill was talking about criminals only.
House Bill 3057, Mr. Chairman, as you well know, is a bill dealing with identity theft. Started out as a different bill. I do not recall the number off the top of my head, but because other things happened in this bill, and as we all know, it became a new number, but a different horse of same horse of a different color. Before you, hopefully you have been given the dash A9 amendment. Is that in your packet?
It will be.
It happens to be a dash A9 amendment. The bill, as you see it today, creates a crime of identity theft and is pretty self-explanatory. I might point out in the House Committee, the Policy Committee, this bill occurred, it was brought forward that identity theft is the largest area of crime, growing area of crime in the nation. It's a very important issue. It's something in Oregon that we need to do some work to so that there is something that people can be prosecuted for. Under current law, they could possibly be prosecuted for fraud. Or if they actually do steal something from someone else, they could be prosecuted for that theft. But in many cases, all they do is they use a person's name and identifying numbers, and they become that person on paper, but they've never actually stolen anything from anyone. And so, as was reported by one of my constituents that came and testified to the Committee on Judiciary Criminal Law, that in this case, in this crime now in Oregon, crime does pay. Because the people who are doing the theft are not being prosecuted. They're reaping all the rewards and get to keep those rewards, and the only loser in this whole thing, because credit card companies and banks and other people are writing off these debts and being bad debts, the person who perpetrates the crime gets to keep the goods, and the only loser is the victim. So I think it's very important that we move this bill forward. One thing, Chairman Mannix of that committee set up a work group and put together this bill in its current form, which I very much appreciate, Mr. Chairman, because I know that it was not easy, and you guys spent a lot of time working on it. Well, one of my staff members, he was an intern in my office, and he spent his entire time with me this session, I think, working on this one bill. Unfortunately, when the bill got down here and we got the fiscal statement on it, it was big. And in order to get the bill moving forward, we working with committee staff, found out what we need to do to reduce the fiscal to an allowable amount for this session, and maybe we can address some of the other concerns at a later date. The A9 amendments that you have in front of you will, on page 1 of the bill, remove subsection 1B of section 1. This is the lines 8 through 10 on the front page. It's talking about a person who is lying to police officers of the courts. Apparently, that part of the bill is creates quite a fiscal impact because apparently a lot of people must lie to police officers in court is what we can determine from that. I don't agree that I think that, you know, I'd like to see that in the bill, but in order to get a bill moving, I think it's imperative we take it out so we can at least address the bigger problem. We also, in the A9 amendments, are removing Section 2 of the bill except for, or and replacing it with a new Section 2, and that new Section 2, and I hope I just have seen the A9 for the first time, but hopefully what it will include is lines 3 through 12 on page 3 of the A9 version of the bill. which is the sentencing for the identity theft. That was the intent of the NIH. I hope that is what they do. As I said, I just now received them myself. With that, I think that I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I was compelled to introduce this bill by a request of a constituent who had read some articles and who had never actually been a victim of the crime itself, but he had read articles about it, and he told me what was going on, and I have a file, as you can see, quite thick on it, explaining how bad this is, and many states nationwide, in fact, Congress has taken up the issue, and they're trying to make it across the states, because currently, as the one person from my district testified to in the Substance Committee, the person who had stolen her identity was actually in Indiana, and I don't know that we could prosecute someone in by Oregon law if they never actually came to Oregon and done the crime. So hopefully we'll do something at the federal level that will take care of the interstate problem also. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman. Representative, the language under the new amendment, -9 amendment, on line 16 and 17, it says, or computer crime under ORS. If I were to be logged onto my computer ordering a product from a mail order house, you mentioned Indiana, let's use that as an example. And somebody in Indiana working for that company obtained the use of my social security number, my credit card number, or other identification that was required over the computer. What recourse would I have if they were to then go out and charge against me? I know that the federal limit requires you're only eligible or required to pay up to $50 on a credit card without notifying the bank that it was lost, but it may be in your possession and somebody else is using it under a different circumstance. They have enough identification of you to know who you are, what your numbers are on certain things. How would that be dealt with under this section that's being proposed here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I see you've grabbed the statute book. I'm hoping you can...
No, I don't.
Mr. Chair, you've grabbed the statute book as you were asking the question. I'm hoping you can answer what ORS 154-377 is.
I can't help it. Senator, what we have here is this part is a repeat offender section and says that if you've had a prior crime involving forgery in the first degree or criminal possession of a forged instrument or fraudulent use of a credit card or computer crime, and the reference to computer crime is something that's in current statute, and the essence of it is you commit computer crime if you knowingly access, attempt to access, or use or attempt to use any computer system, computer network, or any part thereof for the purpose of devising or executing any scheme or artifice to defraud, obtaining money, property, or services by means of false or fraudulent pretenses, representations, or promises, or committing theft, including but not limited to theft of proprietary information. So that, in effect, using your computer to steal other people's computer information or to steal other materials.
Now, is that only good, Mr. Chairman, in Oregon, since it's transcends state lines? What protection do I have if I'm doing business with a firm outside the state?
Mr. Chairman, it would probably have to be dealt with through federal law, there's enough Oregon nexus if someone, in effect, accesses your computer in Oregon that we could argue that the crime has been connected up with Oregon. I am not,
I don't know.
Just someone in Indiana who accesses your computer.
I just don't want someone to fall through the cracks and say, geez, we didn't even think about doing business outside the state because a person could be doing cell phone solicitation to a firm outside the state, no computers involved, and they're calling from one of these backroom shops selling a product. And if you gave them your credit card number, they could, in essence, use that to make purchases on your own credit card. And I just want to make sure that theft of identity get what we're trying to do here. I support what you're trying to do.
The other question I have, Mr. Chairman, is with the deletion of Section 2 and the addition of the new Section 2, does that negate the $2.9 million fiscal impact?
That's the idea.
If I'm going to speak to that for a minute, Chairman and Senator Hannon, the effect of eliminating the repeat property offender provisions under this bill that had a debt impact of approximately, I think it had an effect of about 109 offenders that were going to be added to the property offender forecast is the primary reason that drives the fiscal impact down. It reduced the prison debt impact from $2.7 million down to approximately $12,000 as the offenses under identity theft alone. Most of those are presumed to be 18-month probationary sentences. Approximately 12 of the offenders in that group would be receiving a 12-month or less sentence of 1145. So it essentially takes what was approximately a $3 million fiscal impact down to a little over $100,000 in this current biennium.
If a person was convicted under these statutes, is there any cost recovery? The reason I'm asking, you have a senior citizen who has been built out of somebody over the phone, giving them their credit card number and saying, we will give you a prize in exchange for you sending us $700. Is there any trouble damages or anything else that would, if that person were convicted under theft of identity, be able to recover?
There is restitution, which is provided for in the statute. There's also fines which could be imposed as conditions of probation. But there's no treble restitution provision or anything like that in here. One could also bring a civil action against the perpetrator. Part of the problem, Senator, would be the fact that by the time these people are caught, they often don't have much left in the way of financial resources. Sometimes they will still have the ill-gotten gains. Other times they won't. To the extent that they have identifiable ill-gotten gains, they can be forced to disgorge them and to return them.
Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Senator Hannon's question, I've been frantically looking through my file here to find out. You did bring up a very important point about the issue of crossing state lines, and we do need to, hopefully we'll have, a crime in Oregon. Many other states, I've got a list here of 13 states that have also made it illegal. That was as of the end of 1998. I have a March 1999 state legislator's book with an article in that about this, where the federal government is working on making it a felony at the federal level with restitution and make it non-financial fraud. I don't know to date what the extent of that federal legislation is. I can't answer that question. But I do know the federal government is looking at it, so that would address the interstate aspect of it then.
Okay. Let me ask the chair one more question, if I can. As the representative listed off the 13 states, and then part of this is covered also under federal law?
Yes.
Without recreating the fiscal impact, would there be a possibility of tying in reciprocity with other states that have similar consumer protection laws so that Oregon, it protects if a person from Indiana is doing the devious behavior, Indiana has one of these provisions in their statutes. We could actually contact the state of Indiana to protect the consumer in Oregon.
Senator, we can actually work with the other state right now.
Okay.
And
so you're saying you don't need it?
I think not.
Okay. Well, I'm just asking.
Always explore the possibilities. Good thing to do. Any further questions for Representative Byer? All right. Thank you very much. We anticipate a work session in the next few days. We don't have one scheduled for today, which is why Representative Westland let me run this committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the hearing, and I look forward to a work session on the bill. I probably should get back to the rules where your presence is greatly desired also, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we go off the record on this one, I just want to state one fact that there are some laws in place right now that will deal with people who lie to police officers, giving false information to police officers. This would be so broad that you recognize what the financial impact would be. And we can, in fact, if we want to have a warrant for someone who's out of state issued, it's a matter of extraditing them and then basically bringing them back, which is another resource issue for the local county, district attorney's office, or whoever.
Which reminds me that the Representative Minnis has a little extradition clarification of amendment that might fit right into this bill, since this bill relates to crime. Senator?
Yeah, the only thing I want to tighten the requirements down on extradition and make sure, because it's a matter of cost sometimes with DAs decide to charge in a case or not because of the budget-driven scenario that they're operating under. So I would like to make it, I don't want to call it attractive, but I want to make it so that there's a gentle persuasion to maybe go after some of these cases and prosecute them.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, the problem is, one, this is a Class C felony.
Yeah, I know.
And the Class A are pretty much across the board. They'll do it. Class B is a little bit more iffy. Class C, they can do it, but if it's up for other priorities and backlog of cases, money. I think if you can see or you show where you have somebody or an organization that is really profiting, those cases are the ones that you've seen reaching out as compared to the case that we heard from Representative Byers. This one was an individual who was doing some type of, I think it was loan applications or working with somebody that was in Indiana. And the employee got the information and basically was stupid enough to start ordering stuff to her own residence. And they were able to track it very easily. But those type of cases, more than likely in reality, you're not going to see them being brought into this city.
Oh, yes. There are
always very good questions.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 3057? Yes, sir. Please come forward. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Jerry Levy. I testified originally at the hearing on the bill in front of the committee here. I'm not going to take a lot of time nor repeat items that you've discussed prior to this hearing. I would just say I am in support, obviously, of the bill. If we have to modify it to get it passed, to get something on the books, that's what we have to do. It's very important. I don't know how much you've seen of the Oregonian lately. We held a training session on identity theft in the Beaverton area on May 27th. We had at least two people in that session. That one came to us specifically because their identity had been stolen, wanting to know what to do about it. There was an article on May 29th, including people who had testified at the original committee hearing, and we just had one yesterday in the Oregonian and West Metro West section concerning identity theft. We had two calls this morning already on people saying, can you help me? We need some help in this area with our identity theft tip that we have. So it's a very, very important matter. We have to get something on the books. It's happening every day. We are planning. One of the reasons I look at the fiscal impact here is that I believe in prevention before the law, or when the law is passed, it's even preventing the crime from happening. That reduces the fiscal impact. One of the things we are planning through the newspaper, the 420 Crusader that we have, is an advertising campaign. We're going to be approaching some private industry to come out with support of this, with identity theft tips, as well as getting the word out that, hey, using somebody else's identity is a crime. If that's the case, hopefully, some of these fiscal impacts that we see here won't be necessary. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your coming this afternoon. Is there anyone else that would like to testify in House Bill 3057? Seeing, yes?
Just
Phil Lehman?
It's for the committee's convenience. I asked him to come just because he's been doing the surveys with both the VAs about how their current practice is and how this might affect current practice by passage of this law. And he'll give you a little background on the fiscal development. It's up to you.
I think we understand fiscal analysis. Unless you really want to say something, Mr. Lehman?
We appreciate you being available, and if you could continue to work with Reverend Beyer and Mr. and this one, we can get some amendments that keep the heart of this bill that let us get moving with it. All right. Seeing no other testimony, the public hearing on House Bill 3057 is closed. Colleagues, I got us going earlier on, we'll go back into the public hearing on House Bill 2275, and this was the mail theft bill. Is there anyone here that wanted to testify on House Bill 2275? I will mention that the proposal is to drop the mail theft crime down to a Class A misdemeanor in order to eliminate state that's one proposal that's in front of us. And is there any question about this bill or any further testimony?
Just one question, Mr. Chairman. The $320,000 fiscal impact, it says general fund, but that's money that really goes to counties for 1145.
That's correct.
So the money we have already appropriated in the corrections for 1145, this would come out of those funds, or this is an additional to those funds? Okay.
Chair Mannix, Senator Hannon, this would be in addition to what was budgeted, because what was budgeted was based on the April 1999 forecast, which is based on current law. These would be costs that are expected to be above the forecast upon which the budget is based.
The idea being that there's additional sanctions in this bill that were not anticipated.
Okay. And this is the co-chair's budget.
Chair Mannix and Senator Hinn, they wanted to have public hearings on this. They have also been in discussions with Chair Mannix on ways to mitigate that impact, and that's why some of the discussion has come up about keeping it a Class A misdemeanor.
Okay.
And for the benefit of our friends from the counties, there's another bill which says that if you receive incremental sentences, so you're getting more than 12 months total to serve in the county jail, which right now is all considered 1145. That bill is under discussion for coming up in front of this subcommittee, that would have those sentences served in state facilities, and it would have about 100-bed impact, we are told. We'll have that in front of us. Obviously, it's not in front of us now, but that may be part of the push-pull that we end up pulling 100, I'll call them inmates, out of county jails or out of the community correction system. Co-chairs, I'm sure, will have further discussion about that, but that bill has been discussed, and it does mitigate some of the impact on counties. Representative Zansky.
Sure. Looking at page 2 of the aid and growth, that my understanding that section sub 3, lines 4 through 11, are going to have the same penalty as the section on line 3, which would be a Class A misdemeanor across the board.
We probably have to drop that down, don't you think?
Well, that's what I'm hearing. I mean, if we're talking about keeping the impact down, I mean, there's no reason. When we discussed this in the subcommittee, I think we talked about wanting to potentially have additional sanctions, but we also talked about the financial impact. So I just was trying to get clarification if you were saying that that's what was going to happen to get the impact down.
The idea was to move the Class A felony, which is the further up, down to Class A misdemeanor. And I'm not aware, and perhaps Mr. Lehman can help us with this, whether or not anyone has, well, he may not have been involved in this discussion, whether or not there's any discussion about the Section 3 impact.
Well, not Section 3, the Sub 3.
Oh,
the one that you're talking about. I guess what I'm thinking is, it looks to me that if we're going to do an amendment, we would just basically be deleting lines 4 through 11 to accomplish what you just, I think, said that we're...
Yes, and we'll have those options in front of us. I haven't seen any draft amendments. Yes, I understand you now.
Okay.
Yes, we'd be taking out the incremental sanction at the Class C felony level and leaving the Class A misdemeanor and stopping that. I misunderstood you, and I apologize.
Mr. Chairman, before we leave this section here, I know this House Bill 2275 has an emergency clause on it. The previous bill we dealt with, 3057, did not. So its effective date is 90 days after the legislature adjourns. If both of these are theft of identity or theft of mail, maybe it would be appropriate to let staff know that we need an amendment for an emergency clause. Otherwise, we're just delaying it for another 90 days.
And let's take note of that for the other bill then. And I appreciate your noticing that, Senator. That's a good suggestion. All right. Is there any further testimony on House Bill 2275?
Yeah.
Seeing none, Representative Fasansky?
What the Senator requested, I think that's something option to look at. We probably need to also know what any physical impact that would cause.
Exactly.
And that might be appropriate for the other one, too. 3057.
One has an emergency clause.
One has it. One has it.
So we should look at both options as well.
I think so. Okay.
All right. Okay. Seeing no further testimony or further discussion, the public hearing is adjourned, and we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Very
good. Hi, everybody. I'm glad we're here. Glad to be here.